Hi, I'm Clark Bishop, and today I'm talking with Sean Trundy. And Sean leads FraudFighter, where he protects businesses of all sizes from counterfeit losses and identity fraud. Over the last 12 years, Sean's become the fraud criminal's worst enemy. And in this episode, we're going to look at how banks and other financial institutions can gain a competitive advantage using advanced identity authentication. Thanks for being here today, Sean.
You're welcome, Clark, and thanks for doing this.
You bet, you bet. And so tell us, is identity fraud really that big of a deal? You know, is this something we need to be worried about, or can we just have our employees check one or two identity documents like a driver's license and maybe a credit card or something?
Well, Clark, identity theft is a tremendously big deal. It has become increasingly more prevalent and more in the front of people. In front of people's consciousness, because there's been a lot of major news stories about this issue recently. But actually, over the past 10 years, the trends and statistics involving identity theft have been on the massive upswing. We've averaged something in the range of about 15 million Americans every year has suffered an identity theft event where they've actually experienced a loss as a result of somebody co-opting and stealing their identity at an average cost of about $3,500 per event. So 15 million is about one out of every 14 adult Americans. So if you're in a room of 15 people and you look around, that means at least one of you has been victimized in the last year. Last year, 2013, of course, there were these high-profile events that occurred at Target, at Neiman Marcus, and today there's been revelations that there's a couple more national retailers that also got hacked. So last year, it's expected that as many as 120 million Americans have had some of their identity information stolen. And what that means is that over the coming years, this data that was stolen from them is going to be available for the criminals to be able to utilize. And we're expecting to see a spike in identity theft over the coming couple of years as a result of that.
Golly, I think I may need to go cancel my credit cards.
That's not a bad idea.
and you know, so it's not, you know, I hadn't thought about it before until you just brought it up this way, but, you know, I thought, well, okay, the Target hacking and the other high profile things that happened, they're over with, but you're saying they're not really over with.
No, of course not. Because the hacking of that data itself did not really create any value for the thieves. What has to happen is the data that was stolen now needs to be put into some format, some form that can be utilized by an identity thief. And this is really what has changed over the past 10 years, and it's why we've seen such a spike, is that with just as technology has made life more convenient for us to shop, to bank, to do other things online, so has it made things more convenient for the criminal element. And what has happened is organized crime that has traditionally been involved in drug trade and prostitution and other trades like that have become very heavily involved in this digitalization of crime. And as it relates to identity theft, the digitization of identity theft. So what do you do? If you're the guy that hacked Target, you're the group that hacked Target and you stole 90 million pieces of identity information, well, there's not much that you as individuals can do with that. So you have to be able to take that data and get rid of it, sell it to somebody. And what the organized crime rings have done is they've set up these marketplaces. They're called dark markets. They're in that part of the internet that is not accessible through search engines. It's called the dark market because they're by invitation only. And these dark markets will purchase the stolen data from criminal groups that are doing the hacking. And that what they will do is they'll buy stolen information from dozens and dozens of different hackers and compile databases. And then they can use that same type of technology that companies are using today with big data. They're massaging the data, they're finding matches, and they're compiling data. Maybe they got some information from Target, but maybe another hacker got some of your personal information from your bank or from some other retailer or from the Social Security office or from the DMV or wherever else they may have hacked. And what's happening is all of these different sources of stolen data are being compiled and assembled into profiles, which are then sold to local identity thieves. So somebody in your marketplace where you're located would then go online and say, I'm looking to buy identities of people who are located here where you live. And they would be offered, you know, a package of identities, and they could then buy a full and complete package on you, which may include things like your mother's maiden name, some of your passwords, maybe a PIN number or two, maybe all or part of your social security number. And together with that, they're able to assemble your identity and try to assume your identity.
When you say assume my identity, you know, what does that really mean? They're going to get a credit card and I'm going to start getting bills from them?
Well, yeah. And where, you know, just again, as technology has made life so convenient for us, so have these dark markets made life convenient for the identity thief. So not only can you buy the profile, and we're just going to use you as an example, you know, Clark Bishop, you know, somebody's buying your identity, not only are they going to steal your name, maybe your driver's license number, your home address, maybe they'll be able to access some of your public records so they know where you've lived before. Again, maybe they'll get part or some or all of your social security number. So not only are they buying that information, but that same marketplace is going to offer them connection to where they can purchase professionally forged documents that would then match your identity. So what they would do then is buy professionally forged documents. We might be talking about a social security card, a driver's license, a passport, a birth certificate, some combination of those, or maybe just one of those. And that professionally forged document, if it was an ID document like a driver's license or a passport, it would have the criminal's picture on it instead of yours. So they could then go and present themselves at your bank or at another bank and begin trying to transact as though they were you.
You're scaring me, Sean. It's like big data meets organized crime. You know, we've heard all the stories about the NSA monitoring all the phone calls using big data, but it is amazing everything you can do with enormous databases. And so now we're going to have fraud criminals using all that technology.
That's exactly right. It really is frightening. And I think you put your finger right on it. It is big data meets organized crime.
Wow. And you know, you said professional forgers. So once you've got all this data, it sounds like it's even worse than in some of the science fiction or spy movies you see, where you can get very sophisticated identity documents forged and do it all through these websites. And I mean, it's really organized crime, not just organized crime anymore.
Well, actually, there's two paths, but you're correct that the one path is that while purchasing your identity profile information, your data, that I could also purchase professionally forged matching ID documents. But this is another, you know, place where the advent of technology has made things easier on the criminals. Just as it's easy now for somebody like you or me to publish a book or publish an item that looks very professional just using my computer, just using software that's available on my computer, so is it possible for just your average criminal with a little bit of computer experience to also be able to just forge any document they want right at home with the use of Photoshop and a scanner and a high resolution inkjet printer, or even better, a laser jet printer. They can produce documents that are very realistic looking. And this, in all aspects of our business, the Fraud Fighters business, this has been really the thing that has changed the face of counterfeiting and the face of forgery. Is that now anybody can produce a highly evolved, very realistic looking document just utilizing over-the-counter available printing and design equipment.
So do these fraud criminals, do they usually just create one document, or might they create several?
Depends on their goal. We have seen, for example, one of our customers, and I won't mention them by name, because that's our obligation, one of the major international rental car agencies, and they have some of our equipment that's used for doing identity document authentication, which, of course, they're very concerned about because somebody's about to drive off their lot with an expensive vehicle, and they're basically making the decision, to release that vehicle to that person on the basis that they have received an identity document from them. So they use our equipment, and they had a situation in here in actually in Los Angeles, where I'm located, out of LAX, where in the span of 3 or 4 days, the same person went to 2 different locations and rented 3 different vehicles using 3 different identity documents, 3 different matching credit cards, but it had the same person's picture on all 3 documents. And this was one of the items that really convinced them that the product that they were testing at the time, our product that they were testing at the time, was effective, because they were able to prevent the last 2 of those transactions from occurring.
So having 2 pieces of identification doesn't really help very much.
It really doesn't, because I could just as easily forge a birth certificate as I could a driver's license. And I could just as easily forge a credit card that matches the driver's license as I could. You know, it's not difficult. If I have a template, and this is another thing you can buy on these dark markets, is you can go ahead and buy the templates to produce these types of documents. If I have a template, all I have to do is type in the name, the address, and insert a photo, do all that in Photoshop, and then print it out on a nice high-resolution printer and laminate it, and I am typically going to be in business, because the average person isn't going to be able to visually observe that document and recognize it as forged.
Well, I had never thought about the car rental example. So there's all kinds of businesses that have this problem, but it's got to be especially bad for banks and financial institutions, right? Because, you know, if you steal the car, I guess you can take it apart. It's harder to sell a car, and it's more trouble to deal with a car. But if you go into a bank or some other institution after a fraudulent loan, that can be really big dollars, and it can happen quickly, right?
Of course. You're correct that you know, almost any business at some point in the conducting of their transactions with the public has to rely on an identity document at some point. But when you're looking at the financial services industry, the identity document really is the basis from which a bank or a credit union or a consumer loan company makes a decision of whether or not they're going to do business with you. I go into the bank branch, I say, I would like to open a new bank account. And what's the first thing they ask for? Let me see your ID document. Let me see your driver's license. I take the driver's license out, I show that to them, and then they start to move forward based on that. And so for that reason, the financial service industry is really exposed to potential fraud based on identity theft, because it is truly the fundamental document from which they base all future decisions about whether or not you are going to become a customer.
I sure hope you've been working as hard as the criminals have to figure out what to do about it. Is there any hope? You know, what can you do?
Well, of course. And that's kind of a leading question, Clark, because obviously what can be done about it, we believe that here at FraudFighter that we are, you know, squarely pitched in this battle and have tools, have the weapons that financial institutions and other businesses can use to help defend themselves against this, you know, this growing problem. Here at FraudFighter, our thought process is really quite simple. And although you can take the thought process and make it very complex by building it into a complex business process, fundamentally, what we believe is that anytime a person transacts with you, you should authenticate their ID document. So if I am already an existing customer of the bank and I come in to do a wire transfer or to purchase a money order or to access my deposits or to go into my safety deposit box, no matter what the transaction is, that when I come in, that bank should conduct an authentication of the ID document. And that's what we do here at FraudFighter. We sell products that allow the frontline employee, the person that's at the counter transacting with the customer, to take that ID document and then to conduct a test on it to verify that the document is genuine.
So there are ways to test these documents and weed out the fraudulent ones?
There is. There are a variety of different solutions that we offer. At a most fundamental level, we have a type of of light, type of ultraviolet light that can be used to view identity documents to see whether or not they've been printed with certain types of secure inks that can be identified when you look at them under the proper wavelength of light. That's a very simple tool. It's a very low-cost tool, very easy for a large financial institution or a small company to implement without a whole lot of effort. It's not, of course, going to be the most secure or the most absolutely perfect defense against forgery operations, because, as we said, there are professional forgery operations who are making documents and selling them. And although we're not really aware of it right now, it is certainly possible that they will begin to integrate some of these secure inks into their work that they sell. So we sell more advanced products that conduct what we would have to call a forensic examination of the document. By that, I mean, we take high resolution pictures with cameras, with under different light sources, that we have a database that has templates that tell us that on this particular type of ID document, say, for example, a California driver's license. On the California driver's license, we know that the template says that the font size should be this, that in this location there should be microprinting, in this location there should be a hologram, that we have infrared printing here, that means printing that's only visible under infrared light, that in this location there's UV printing, which is ink that can only be seen under UV light, that the magnetic strip should have information that is encoded in this fashion, that there's a barcode that should have information that's encoded in this fashion. And when we read the printed information on the front and we compare it to what was printed on the magnetic strip or what was printed on the barcode, all of that information should match. So we run all of these different tests and put them into a table, and we grade the document and then give it a pass-fail grade. And this equipment, like I said, can be made into a very complex business process that would allow the customer, the end user, the bank or the credit union, to decide, well, we're going to grade ID documents based on this standard. And you can adjust the sensitivity so that it will pass a document with lower thresholds or with higher thresholds, depending on what type of transaction you're doing. So, for example, if you were going to be issuing a check against a home equity line of credit, so you have a $90,000 check and you're about to distribute it to your customer, and you want to verify the identity document of that customer just before you hand them that check, you might want to run a very high threshold test on that ID document to make sure that you're absolutely positive this document is genuine. But if somebody's just in and they're cashing a check for $200, you may not want to set the threshold that high. So that's what we offer to the bank, is a flexible set of solutions that can be layered in the branch and can be set to different levels of security, of security standard, so that the equipment is designed to detect and deter fraud according to the level of risk that the branch is exposed to at that transaction location.
Okay, so does it take a long time for all of that? You ran off a list of, it seemed like, 20 or 30 different things you're looking for and the cameras. Does it take a long time to do the high security version?
No, it's literally a 7-second test. So you insert the license, the cameras go off, the software runs, and you get an answer in 7 seconds or less.
And so you don't have to do any special training or anything for the people in the bank. They just gives it a grade.
That's correct.
So, I mean, it seems like that'd be pretty easy, because it's got to take more than 7 seconds to be doing processing a loan or generating a check for a home equity credit line or whatever.
Of course. The amount of time added to a transaction to conduct this kind of test is inconsequential. And in fact, if you think about it, what would the process be if they didn't have the equipment? Well, it might be a visual inspection of the document. It might be under certain circumstances that this employee has to call the branch manager over to look at it, which would be, of course, a bigger delay. And then you call the branch manager over. Well, what's the branch manager going to look at? Because just in the United States alone, just talking about state ID cards, driver's licenses, and other types of identity cards that are issued in the United States, like military IDs, congressional IDs, TWIC cards, which are merchant marine IDs. All told, there's over 1,100 different designs in the United States that are currently valid. So what kind of a human being can you expect to be able to come over and just automatically be able to look at an ID document and say, oh, this is real? And the answer is none. You know, there's no human that can do this on all of the available documents that are currently valid in the United States for this purpose. So for that reason alone, having, you know, a machine that's able to do this for you, not only accurately, but quickly, is a value to the bank, because it will actually speed up the process, not slow it down.
You mean you can't hire branch managers that have infrared vision superpowers anymore?
Not that I'm aware of. There might be one or two from Krypton that that skill.
Maybe we could find a way to create some infrared vision contact lenses and make them wear those. So,
yeah. Google Glasses. Who knows?
Well, I feel a little bit better now. That it sounds like there really is some hope, but. This has got to be an ongoing hassle. It sounds like it's kind of an ongoing arms race between the criminals and the banks and retailers and other financial institutions.
It absolutely is an arms race, and it's sad to say that as we saw last year, that currently the criminals are winning. You know that currently the security steps taken by those organizations who we as consumers have trusted to protect our information, that they haven't taken sufficient steps, and that the criminals are winning. They are taking advantage of this environment right now where they have actually the better tools and the better weapons, and are able to easily defeat the security that's in place right now. So you're right. It's an arms war, and the next round is that the private sector has to step up and start really looking at this seriously.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't, on the one hand, it's obviously got to cost something to do it. But on the other hand, just avoiding one of those $100,000 fraudulent home equity loans probably pays for a lot of equipment.
Absolutely. The losses on the financial service side in the United States just annually, you know, I think the last year we had data on was 2012, $31 billion in 2012. So the numbers are there from a loss perspective to justify making this type of investment. But I think what's important to consider here is not just the loss. And you know, when we're talking to our bank customers, to our prospective customers for this type of product line, you know, and we're asked to make a business case to sell the product to them using a business case, we're almost always going to be looking at the loss numbers as the way we justify for them a return on investment. And the numbers are there every time. But I think what's important to consider here is that this is not just about loss prevention or asset protection. This is also about marketing and diversification and positioning your bank, your financial institution, your credit union as being on the forefront of protecting your customers' assets, that you can actually differentiate yourself in the marketplace, because unlike the other guys, you are actually taking extra steps to be authenticating the customer every time they come in, not just to prevent losses so that your bank doesn't take financial losses, but so you can protect your customers' assets, which is really the very thing the customer is expecting you to do. You know, in the old days, people put money in a bank because they had a big vault that could protect it from you know, the robbers. Nowadays, we're putting money in the banks, and it's our expectation that you're going to protect that money from hackers. And so far, it's not really happening. You know, it's not really being protected from identity thieves. And the way I think for a bank to really stand out and start attracting customers is to market on this issue, that we are looking out for you and that we're taking extra steps.
And it seems like consumers would really respond to that, because we've all heard about people are aware of the problem, things like the Target data breach, and I don't even want to think about how much money that costs Target, both to their revenues and stock price, and you know, it's one of those kind of events. It's just catastrophic for your company.
Absolutely, and there's a long list of companies that have had this kind of issue. Yeah, it's very much in the forefront of the consumer's mind.
And something like that at a bank could almost cause a a bank fail overnight.
It could cause a run if there was, I mean, up to this point, to our knowledge, nothing public has been released about, you know, a hack on a bank network, at least nothing on a major scale. But you're absolutely right. You know, imagine what happens if, and I'm not going to use any bank names, but, you know, if something like a bank that had 10,000 branches and maybe had 25 million customers had their network hacked. And suddenly 25 million customers' accounts and social security number and, you know, very specific details about their assets and where the assets are located and what type of assets they are. If that information was put into the hands of criminals, you know, it would be catastrophic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I think it for me, it would certainly, to the extent that I'm counting on my bank to protect my funds, it would seem like it'd be a real positive if they were clearly taking intelligent steps to verify I'm who I say I am.
I would think so. And this is the nature of the conversation we're having right now. And, you know, we're focusing on a specific niche in the financial services industry right now, which is the type of bank that does, you know, wealth management, that has wealthy clients, where an individual client account might be worth, well, you know, anywhere from 7 to 9 figures. And we think that, you know, for those types of financial service institutions, that it makes absolute sense to be telling your customers that, you know, that, look, every time you come in here, every time we transact with you, we're going to be authenticating you because you have a lot of assets here and you want them to be safe. And we're going to take the steps that are necessary to keep them safe.
Well, I'll tell you, Sean, you've been a wealth of great information, and I've certainly enjoyed talking with you today. If somebody wanted, who's listening to this, wanted to know more or wanted to get in touch with you, is there something you can do to help them take the next step, see what their exposures and opportunities are?
Well, of course. I mean, the first step would be to either give us a call, and I'll give you our number. It's 800-883-8822. We'd be happy to conduct just, you know, very sort of a standard fraud vulnerability assessment with you, just to discuss what your operations are and how you conduct your transactions, and discuss with you, you know, at least at an initial level, some of the solutions that could be put into place at your organization in order to you know, start securing you against this type of fraud. You know, obviously, that's depending on the size of your business, it can become, you know, a much more involved and complex process that would involve other people, you know, multiple stakeholders in your organization, ranging from customer experience people to operations people to information technology, as well as your asset protection and loss prevention people. So eventually it becomes a project that's going to involve quite a few people. But at the early phases, we could at least talk with you about, you know, who and what you are and how our products have in the past and in the future can be used by you to protect your customers from being victimized.
Well, thank you. And thanks for that opportunity and all these ideas. Anything else that you want to share with us today?
I think I'm talked out.
All right. Well, if anybody wants to hear more, I think that number you said was 800-883-8822. Is that right?
That is correct.
And I know I always enjoy talking with you, so I'm sure anybody who takes advantage of that opportunity would get a lot from the call.
Good. I agree.
Thanks again.